written treatment of the game, the Jurassic World game. It's just really interesting, the story that you created, especially the protagonist of this game was Billy Brennan from Jurassic Park 3. Like, how did you come to that choice for the game character?
Well, you know, he's a great character because he had empathy for the dinosaurs and was studying them. And he kind of reminded me of the lead character in Stargate, the film, who would be like a paleontologist with a bunch of theories about, and you know, you have that document. I'm not sure it's even the latest one. And there are scripts and story stuff and all that. The basic idea is that he like the guy in Stargate, he has all these theories and ideas about velociraptors and other dinosaurs communicating and having emotions, and nobody believes it really. And you know, he ends up, you know, unemployable, which means that he's the guy who's easy to hire when the government decides to go kill all the dinosaurs on site B in order to stop this problem of dinosaurs getting out, right? And so he goes there, and he's, you know, it just made me think that he was the perfect character to live his own theory, right? To discover that his thinking was right. And again, that is like this Stargate story, which I love so much, of like the crazy guy who nobody would believe, and it turns out he's right, and then he becomes essential. But it's not so trite here, in the sense that what becomes essential really is the dinosaurs, and that they're actually Earthlings, and they probably have a better claim to the planet than we do. It was really good to find a guy who had it right all along and have him proved right, but then have it not be all about him, that it's really all about the dinosaurs. And so I tried to find a way that was credible for him to figure out the dinosaurs were emotive and were willing to be friends, while not really believing in it. And to tell that through gameplay, meaning that in the game, you know, you'd have the first encounter with the velociraptor when you're sort of being chased by these two guys trying to just bring you back to camp. And the velociraptor pack kills these two guys super brutally, but not you, because the lead raptor understands that, or thinks that you were trying to protect her eggs. And so he wakes up to that, but he's terrified of them and runs away. And so now he's in the forest and the game begins, and you have missions, and the missions are like to survive. And first you try to get back to the camp, but they shoot at you because now you're seen as a traitor. And so you're powerless. And so, you know, there's a series of missions where you fail and you're powerless and you're totally victimized by this environment and the dinosaurs on one side and the troops come to kill the dinosaurs on the other side. And you witness these atrocities, which, you know, helps you as a player get really angry with these dudes trying to kill the dinosaurs. And then slowly, you know, over the course of a few missions, which are basically like the tutorial for the game, right? How to run, how to pick stuff up, how to find stuff, everything in the game. Over this tutorial, you start to notice that the velociraptors are following you until, and I think it's in the document you have this really explicit encounter where you see them communicating with one another. And out of frustration, you replicate one of their vocalizations and they respond to it. Okay, so now you get this new capability. You have a gun you can shoot, but we're adding a new thing to gameplay, which is that you have a button on the controller where you can say something to the raptors. And then you get a bigger vocabulary with them and they start coming with you on missions. And then you meet other dinosaurs and you learn which ones are assholes and which ones are allies. And you end up allying with the Tyrannosaurs, which I fucking love. And you learn the Tyrannosaurs have personalities, and there's some that are dicks and some that are cool. And you can tell the difference between the males and the females. And then eventually in the game, what happens is you have more and more success, and this gets sort of picked up in world news media. And the Admiral, also, by the way, I love Alexander Nuvola, so I thought it was great to put him in there. Eventually this guy figures out what's going on, the Admiral in charge of this operation, and captures Blue. And so the final mission is now when you have full control. And after he captures Blue, you actually have to fight another velociraptor, and you become the dominant male of the velociraptor tribe.
Oh, nice.
And they follow you, okay? And yeah. you sleep with them and you hunt with them and the whole thing, right? And you end up rescuing Blue. And but this is at the end of the game when you know everything. So you have the pterosaurs on your side. You have the giant theropods on your side. You have the stegosauruses and the other four-legged animals on your side, and they all know you, and they all know you're a friend, and you go and you rescue Blue, and the game ends on the beach when you get her out of her cage, and there are all these news helicopters filming this, and Billy opens the cage and she runs out and hugs him. In that moment, right? The world sees the relationship we should have.
That's great. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's only like briefly touched upon in the movies, like that kind of relationship that we could have with other creatures of, our Earth, or in this case, our Earth's past, intelligent creatures. And it's just crazy that what could have been, in this game. I mean, did you plan to have Alessandro provide his voice for the character?
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to make it Alessandro. I mean, I had, at that point, I was really at CAA. I had started to really push for actors to have virtual presence in games as themselves, to be paid SAG rates, the whole deal, full cargo in games, and bring that celebrity in. That was something I was really serious about, and I was trying to push inside the talent agency. And so I was, by all means, going to do that in my game. I had an idea for who was going to play Admiral Nellis, who was the bad guy, which is Bradley Cooper. And I was going to go for it. Yeah. Bradley Cooper being the biggest dick possible, which he's really good at.
Yeah. That would have been great.
Yeah. So that was the idea. And I really, I get very emotional when I think of that, especially that last scene of just, how powerful kindness is when it's shown to be more powerful than all these weapons. I mean, being able to command like Tyrannosaurus or Acrocanthosaurus or Allosaurus as a weapon, or any like the big quadrupeds, like, and watch them just like destroy tanks and seeing Quetzalcoatlus, which is the apex predator of the most violent ecosystem that ever existed on Earth. Like, nothing can stop that animal. Watching that thing take down jets, like, that's what I wanted this to be about. Just like to see the power of these guys on our side. I think that's much more viscerally entertaining than to see one of these animals like as a terror threat, right? As a kind of horror film where your guys are being attacked. Instead, like, watch them kick ass on our side and worry about them getting hurt. That's what I wanted to go for.
Yeah, and that's definitely a unique take on it that, I think the document even suggests that, that's the issue other dinosaur games or other games of its kind make, is that they just make the dinosaurs always be the villain.
Yeah, and it turns out they're just a bag of hit points. And when you empty the bag, they fall over. And that sucks. Like, shooting them and having blood spots appear and then having them play a fall over animation. Fuck that, honestly.
Yeah, give them an actual, almost like a character, if you will. Because, it kind of characterizes these creatures. Gives them kind of like a, not a human quality, but like a quality that humans like us can understand. Like, a more relatable.
Right. They're sentient. They're earthlings.
Yeah.
They have culture. They have communication. They have feelings. They get angry. And we can recognize that. And they can be tender and they can take care of you and they can reach across the species boundary just like you can. Those things are important and very powerful. I think so much more powerful than upgrading a gun.
Yeah. Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. That's just a shame. I really do hope someday, this game or some version of this game comes to be, if not for, Jurassic Park related, just like have its own original story. Its own original thing would be really unique still to have a game like this. There's an interesting part of the document that did make its way into the movie, which I really, really liked. And in the document, it says the bottom line is that when the engine scientists got this work by splicing missing chains with frog sequences, they were actually doing was engineering in mistakes and preconceptions of what they thought the animals should look like, not what they really were. And it would take only one or two generations of any given species before its true characteristics would emerge violently and resolutely. And you even give an example of raptor clans who we met in Jurassic Park 3 would be different, you know, more colored and little feather quills. And, you know, the spawn of that would be, you know, exceptional.
Yeah. And so the timing of the game was when the first female came of age, who was fully the same as she had been in the Jurassic era. That gives me goosebumps to say, right? And I loved that. You know, it's like, okay, the they were scary and slimy, and then, you know, with each iteration, each generation, they become more and more themselves until finally we see just how magnificent they actually were.
It kind of not fills in a plot hole of the movies, but kind of, because, you know, when the first Jurassic Park came out, you know, when they created the dinosaurs for the movie, you know, it was with, you know, the best science they had at the time to make them as realistic as possible. But as time went on, you know, the science changed, you know, more evidence was found of what these creatures were really like. And so I think this idea helps explain it.
Yeah, well, that was the entire point of that idea. And I did, I talked to some geneticists at the time, I think, who kind of backed it up. But I was like, no. Even if it's not exactly accurate science, like, it's pretty good. I know DNA does fix itself, can fix itself over generations and over time. So, you know, if one presumes that the sterile animals were suddenly able to reproduce, which was one of the conceits of the films and the book, that, you know, this could happen as well, and explains a lot. And it lets you, most importantly, I mean, look, I needed to have for the game real differentiation between individuals in the Velociraptor groups and in the other dinosaur groups, so you could tell them apart and know who you were dealing with. And this helped there too.
It's interesting because in Jurassic World, the movie, Dr. Wu says a line to Masrani, who is the owner of Jurassic World, the theme park. And he tells him, like, you know, if we had used the pure DNA of these dinosaurs, they would have turned out very differently than what we have in the parks right now. And that's why, you know, in Jurassic World Dominion, you finally see some, like, feather dinosaurs, for example.
Part of it also, and again, I guess it's not in the document you have, but one of the things I spent a lot of time on writing the script was that these crazy, like, roid rage asshole dinosaurs that attacked and destroyed everything in Jurassic World and in the sequels, you know, they were pissed off because they were broken. They were broken. They weren't really themselves. And you can't be that way all the time in the real world. Like, you have to mate, you have to socialize. You don't spend all your time hunting and eating. It doesn't work that way. And so, you know, there has to be, if you're going to wake up, you know, the actual genetics, and if it's going to repair itself, you're going to get animals that are much more curious and friendly and intellectual. You're just going to.
Yeah, I mean, and not every predator is going to go after every single prey that passes by. Sometimes it's had its fill, right? It's had enough.
And I'm remembering now, you know, things that really influenced me. And there's this great YouTube video, it's old now, but of this German guy who raised a lion cub when it was younger. And then they released it to the wild. And he got the idea to go visit it in the wild because it was tagged, the radio locator. And so, and everyone said, you shouldn't do it. You shouldn't do it. It's going to kill you. Right? Because that's the view of predators. And so he goes, and you can look this up. He goes to visit, finds the lion. The lion runs up to him and hugs him and just loves him, and then runs away and goes and gets his wives and his family and shows them and introduces them. And shows off what he's done to his dad. So, you know, you can't have a two-dimensional view of any animal.
No, I mean, they're, like you said, sentient beings. Like, they have their own lives. It's not all about us. You know what I mean? Like, no. A lot of people like to think it is. Really not.
Yeah, I think that's a central conceit of Jurassic Park, and it has to be because you're introducing a new story and this new idea. But okay, if you continue on, you have to get away from that.
Yeah, and that's, again, that's kind of a mistake I think movies can make too. And I know the story of Jurassic World is technically over with Dominion, but you know, if they do continue on with other spin-offs or just a news story, I do hope that they do focus more on, you know, these kind of themes that right. You had presented. Does Steven still talk to you about any of this? And like, does he still ask for any like input from you, like on the future of the Jurassic franchise?
No, I don't hang out and chat with Steven much. I occasionally see him or, you know, I'm talking to somebody when he's around or, you know, he's said hello to me through people occasionally, but, you know, he's a busy guy and I am just an ant walking the face of the earth, you know. The people who make stuff, and Steven is one of them, are most often like just really down-to-earth, cool people. And that's who Steven is. I mean, just really cool, smart guy. You know, Caroline's story about the joke, that's who he is. Exactly right. You know, somebody, he hears something and he asks, do you mind if I write that down? Would that be okay? Can I use this idea? Steven Spielberg, to some art department coordinator 22-year-old's ever met.
No, that's amazing. The fact that he takes everyone that seriously.
And he does. Yeah.
Did you ever hear about any other like ideas for Jurassic Park 4 like during that time? Like
this thing started out as its own sort of peninsula, right? And we worked really hard. And then you know, the guy got fired at Universal and our funding left and the parts sort of, you know, flew apart. And that was my experience of it. There was this awesome moment where I had a call from Frank's office when they were working on the sequel to Jurassic World, asking if I had any more concept art. And I resisted the urge to say, fuck all the way off. But I didn't have anything else to share with them. They already had it all.
Like if you were ever asked to dip your toes back into the Jurassic World, if you will, would you?
At this point, I don't know if it's cursed for me or not. You know, I think I've had a good ride and I think it's time for other people to mount that steed. You know, I hope, you know, honestly, I'm happy that people have found the trailer and these documents and stuff, and I hope you put them out there and it maybe inspires people. Maybe it can live on that way.
Yeah, I think it already was inspiring because, I mean, when I saw the pitch trailer when it was leaked, you know, years ago now, that to me was like what I expected the aftermath of Jurassic Park 3 to be. Like, okay, so the, you know, pterosaurs got off the island and they wrecked some havoc. And now someone has to go figure that out. You know, someone has to go retrieve them and get them. And so it was just so gratifying to see that played out, even just in a very short form. And I know it's interesting because in the document, it also explains, you know, massive sea reptile, kind of like a mosasaur that was also on the loose and, you know, in the oceans, which is exactly what we see in Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom and Dominion. So it's just really fun and cool that these little things seeped out and we still got to see one way or another. So it's still nice that it all happened even the way it did.
You know, I got to say, I'm really proud of that trailer. You know, the way that the Quetzalcoatlus lands on the lifeguard hut and clearly intelligently looks down to figure out why it's collapsing. And just the idea that this world that it finds itself in is so weak compared to the world it's from. And that these animals that lay out on the water to be eaten are so stupid. And that, you know, it has a friend and they're hunting together and they're communicating. And also just that it has like super fearsome performance. Like, you know, that's, you know, in some regimes, you know, paleontologists and biomechanics people and bio aerodynamicists at Stanford have determined that Quetzalcoatlus had, you know, equal or greater performance than a modern jet fighter in some ways, like in some regimes. And it's not surprising because they were the apex predator of, as I said, the most ferocious ecosystem in the history of the Earth. So they had to. And now they're in our world, and our world is so soft.
Yeah, in comparison, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's good talking to you about this stuff. You know, thanks for reaching out.
Yeah, no, of course. I mean, it's good to finally get, you know, the full story of all this, because it was such a mystery for people for so long once that pitch trailer had leaked online, you know, years ago. And you were just mentioning, you know, the Quetzalcoatlus and, you know, its behavior in the pitch trailer. And, you know, David Krentz was one of the people that, you know, worked on that, right? Like the animal behavior and, you know, the artwork as well.
Yeah.
He's always done a great job with that kind of stuff, because he's even done like a couple of like Discovery Channel documentaries where he, you know, put his input. You know, he just does some really great work. So it's cool to see his talent help you bring that to life.
Oh yeah, David Krentz, and I'm having trouble remembering everyone. Some of them were friends of Ian's, and then I found paleontologists. I still have in my lab, in my super secret stealth day job company, we have a very large machine shop, and sitting on top of one of our CNC mills is a like quarter scale Quetzalcoatlus model.
Oh wow, that thing's beautiful. It's so cool. I mean, they ended up having that dinosaur in, or that prehistoric reptile, in the Jurassic World Dominion film. So was that cool to, you know, finally see it in an official Jurassic capacity?
Yeah, it was. I think that for me, the biggest gotcha moment actually is when in the Jurassic World film, they literally replicate the trailer moment with a pterosaur picking somebody off a wave and carrying them off. And I, you know, that's a scream out loud moment for me.
I can imagine. Are you still in contact with any of the people you've worked with, either on this game pitch and also on Trespasser?
Yeah, I mean, off and on I am. It's pretty strange with a lot of guys on Trespasser who I think were, I mean, I imagine were super angry with me. I've met them, you know, over the years, and it turns out that, you know, they're not as furious with me as I had worried. And I was pretty hard on myself after that whole thing. And then, you know, Xbox has, you know, it obliterated the whole playing field on that, because that, you know, somehow elevates you into being some kind of legendary figure. And so those conversations seem less important, I guess. You know, people get freaked out who know me for baking bread on Twitter when they find out about Xbox. And I worry that if they find out about Jurassic World, you know, they might just start believing that I'm actually a fictional character. which might be true.
Then that'd be a whole nother kind of story we have to worry about.
I'm not going to deny it. Without the disaster of Trespasser, I wouldn't have gone and hidden away at Microsoft. I wouldn't have ever had that conversation with Johnny Wilson or a million other things. And I also, you know, I was an arrogant fuck, man. I was probably fairly intolerable at that time. And so that was probably really good for me.
Well, yeah, we all go through our stages, right? And I mean, and what happened with you, you know, ended up being both a comeback story and a success story. So, I mean, I think that you should be very proud of yourself.
Only to then become yet another failure story with Jurassic World. So it always comes in waves, man. I think having the story out is important to me. And, you know, solving the riddle of that trailer and other concept art and stuff floating around is important to me. And, you know, I think I've sort of been in orbit around Jurassic Park for so long. Talking about it feels good.
You're definitely a huge piece of the Jurassic world, so to speak. And it's very special to me, and it's very special to a lot of people. So I hope you remember that.
Thank you very much. That means a lot to me. Thank you.
I hope you have enjoyed this engaging conversation with Seamus Blackley. It was truly a joy discussing his projects, career, and the amazing life he has had. His perseverance and unending talents led to amazing creations that have enhanced countless lives. And personally, I can't ever thank him enough for giving me a chance to explore a fabled island off the coast of Costa Rica. If you'd like to learn more about the untold stories of Jurassic Park, please visit Jurassic Time, featuring John Hammond's memoir program, Rick Carter's illustrated audio drama, and much more. This has been Derek Davis.